Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, very much from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, March 26, 2021. African Union officials visit South Sudan.
We want to make a promise as members of the AU Peace and Security that we will not leave you. We will continue to support you.
And communities in and around Juba Town are angry about the renaming of their villages by land grabbers.
Yeah, my ancestral land is actually is in the epicenter of the grabbing now. I come from Tokiman village, which is in Rajab Payam. The eastern part of Tokiman village is now facing massive land grabbing.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. African Union's Peace and Security Council officials visiting South Sudan have vowed to take action against the South Sudanese parties that signed the 2018 peace agreement. African Union officials say implementing the deal's security arrangement is a vital and integral part of the revitalized peace agreement. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
A 15-member delegation of the African Union's Peace and Security Council visited Rajaf on a Thursday, one of the unified training centers, to see with their own eyes what is holding up the implementation of security arrangements as defined in the peace deal. Richard Adejola, spokesperson of the delegation, told the trainees in Rajaf the African Union will not abandon them.
We want to make a promise as members of the AU Peace and Security that we will not leave you. We will continue to support you. We have listened while we were there to all the challenges you're facing over here. Challenges of uniforms, of shelter, of medicine, and much more than that, the fact that you have to graduate.
This is the first time the African Union Peace and Security Council team has visited South Sudan since the formation of the unity government in February last year. AU officials say the purpose of their three-day visit is to fully understand the status of the implementation of the peace deal. The visit comes 2 months later after a similar visit by ambassadors from the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, regional bloc. Adejola says the team assured trainers at the Rajaf Center yesterday that the AU intends to push the parties to quickly implement the peace deal.
We have heard your pleas, and in line with our own obligation at the African Union, you will hear from us shortly. We will take this matter to a higher height, and then you will see action very soon.
Security arrangements as defined in Chapter 2 of the peace agreement have largely remained unimplemented. Colonel James Kwar-Chual, Deputy Chief Instructor at the Rajaf Unified Training Center, tells South Sudan in Focus the forces have finished their training and are ready for graduation and deployment. Chual says the unity government has yet to address the challenges facing the center, which he says hampers effort to form a unified army.
There's a big concern, and the concern is that some of them, they are giving up. Some of them, they want to run away from the training centers. And for sure they did. Some of them, they ran away from here. They went up to Yambio, others they went up to Kafuita, others they went up to Torit, simply because they see that, there's no graduation that is happening. Yeah. And if we can't go for much longer, I am afraid that this training center, people will run away from here.
Chual says stakeholders, including unity government officials, must act to address the critical problems at training centers.
I would want to appeal to our leaders so that they can at least bring food and medicines, plus this distance. The message that I have to the AU is that AU, we have many countries of the AU, they are grantors of this peace. And as grantors, they have a part to play. And that part is to make sure that the peace agreement is implemented in letter and spirit.
The Rajaf Unified Training Center is the largest of all 17 centers across the country. When the training began early last year, the center had a total of 8,137 unified forces. Less than half of the trainees who enrolled remained at the center today. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Women and child rights activists in Sudan are condemning the death of a 14-year-old girl reportedly shot by her father after a disagreement over changing from public to private school. A family member says the father is responsible for the girl's death. For VOA News, Nabil Bia has more from Washington.
Attorney General Tajusir al-Hibir says he has launched an investigation to learn the facts on the girl's death after receiving a petition signed by women and child rights activists who demand that the 14-year-old's body be dug up and a thorough investigation into her killing be conducted. Nahed Jabrallah is director at the SEMA Center for Training, a Khartoum-based nonprofit that advocates for the protection of women and children against gender-based violence and other human rights violations. Jabrallah and other activists are demanding an autopsy be conducted to determine exactly how the girl was killed and to determine if it was murder or manslaughter. She says, these are our demands. One, the body should be exhumed and an autopsy be performed on it, and the investigation of what happened should be carried out and charges should be brought against the suspects and they must be arrested. What happened is a grave violation of this child's rights in her life as well as in her death. In a Facebook video posted on Tuesday, Muhammad Babikir al-Bashir Fadl al-Mula, who identified himself as the girl's grandfather, said the girl's father is responsible for her death but called it an accident. He said, according to what I was informed by the family, there was a wedding ceremony where her cousin was getting married. Her father and uncle were preparing to go to the wedding, and the father was cleaning his gun for the ceremony, and a bullet was fired by mistake and hit the girl. That's what I heard from them because I was not around to witness it. Jabrallah notes in the petition that multiple witnesses say the girl's death was murder and must be handled according to Sudan's criminal law of 1991, as well as Sudan's Child Act as amended in 2020. The petition further states that the father is abusive and violent and routinely beat his daughters and wife, and called on the Attorney General to immediately intervene. Jabrallah says she strongly suspects the grandfather and other family members are trying to cover up the crime and provide false information to the public. She says, what will settle this matter is the right procedures. You cannot have someone who has been killed by a gun and by beating, where we have bruises all over their body as well as signs of bleeding and three bullets. Then you dismiss public opinion and fail to open a case and just bury that person without doing an autopsy. Attorney General Al-Hibir said he received the petition and is moving forward with an investigation into the case.
So now we are launching the investigations, and you know there are family considerations as well as public considerations for violence against women. That's why we are trying to conduct in-camera investigations, and we will make the necessary release in due course.
Al-Hibir says exhuming the girl's body is important to determine how she was killed, but says the case is still under the jurisdiction of the district attorney in Omdurman where the incident took place. He says the district attorney there will determine whether to issue an order to dig up the body.
Now we have to identify where she was buried. We have to identify the grave where she was buried. And because in Sudan we don't have that a systematic system or statistical data that would indicate the position. So we are investigating it. Actually, it is very important to do the explanation.
The girl's death caused outrage on Sudanese social media and sparked debate about male custody, honor killing, and other aspects of Sudanese law and culture that many activists say are part of an abusive patriarchal culture. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
More South Sudanese in the diaspora are adding their voices to the rampant land grabbing in central Equatorial State. Henry Wani Ronjang says some landmarks in Rajaf County and around Juba Town have been renamed by land grabbers. Henry says areas like Gumbo is now renamed to Sherikat, Merelotor renamed to Jabal Dinka, Tokiman Village renamed Padang Village, and Longi Mountain has been renamed Jebel Amianin.
Yeah, my ancestral land is actually is in the epicenter of the grabbing now. I come from Tokiman village, which is in Rajapayam. The eastern part of Tokiman village is now facing massive land grabbing. John, I can't imagine what is happening. Yeah, I'll give this illustration just for people to understand how land grabbing is a planned action, okay, and targeted action towards some communities. I say this is planned because I have evidence of history. I have papers and other things. A group of IDPs go to the refugees and internally displaced people office in Juba, something like Rehabilitation and Refugee Resettlement something office, which is supposed to be supported by UNHCR or something. And they write a letter to the Payam or to the commissioner of Juba County. The commissioner passes the letter to the Payam that these people need temporary resettlement. The Payam director asks the chiefs of the area to come and ask them and have a meeting so that they know whether they can do this temporary resettlement. The chiefs say we don't have empty piece of land at the moment. That was in 2015. They officially replied the letter that they don't have a place to temporarily host these IDPs. Okay? But you know what the IDPs did? They called themselves from Padang. IDPs from Padang, Dinka, in Upper Nile. Instead of actually waiting for official allocation, if they were to be given, they went ahead to start grabbing the whole of the eastern bank of Rajav, of Tokiman village. They did their own satellite demarcation, divided it into plots, name it Padang village, okay? Padang Dinka village. Imagine, this is Tokiman village, now renamed Padang village. And then the mountain, it is actually, if you live in Juba and you have gone to the eastern bank on the Juba-Nimule Road, there is the Center for the Blind, which was, of course, built in the 70s,
yeah.
A land which was given by the chiefs of the area and so on through an agreement. Now, they demarcated all that area up to the mountain, that mountain there. The mountain, we call it Lungi. Lungi Mountain, they now rename it Jebel Amyanin. Yesterday, actually, when one of your journalist Winnie Cirino actually was talking to Rose Paulino, and then Winnie was now referring to the mountain as Jebel Amyanin. I was really furious.
What has your community done to resolve these disputes, especially surrounding the renaming of your traditional landmarks in and around Juba?
There hasn't been any dialogue with the community. Up to now, the issue is being handled by the Payam and the state. But the Payam is going nowhere. All the letters that were written and the interviews that were made by Bari community elders in Juba are actually going around this issue. But there has been no official dialogue or an agreement actually to talk on these issues officially or even informally. But the authorities of the state and the Payam and local government and also traditional authorities, they know all these things, but there has not been any dialogue. All they have been doing, like the chiefs have been going to the governor, and the youth have been going to the governor, taking letters, making meetings, but there has not been an organized way of actually sitting down and settling this issue.
You live in a country where there is a rule of law. How have you made your presence in the UK helpful to your communities down home when it comes to these issues of land grabbing?
That's a good question, John. But up to now, this kind of this approach has not yet occurred. But as some of us have said in the interviews, in the other previous interviews, we are actually gathering information and engaging in a dialogue among ourselves so that we reach a way forward, especially a legal way of handling this issue, so that from now onwards we deal with the issue in a very organized way, because it is a very serious issue.
You worked in the SPLM office in London. You also went to Juba, worked there for some time, so almost 10 years. According to what people are telling us, these land grabbers are soldiers in uniform. And to be specific, these are members of the SPLA. What are you doing to talk to the SPLA commanders about these issues, because there is a thin line between SPLA and SPLM.
It's unfortunate that the SPLA, who we regarded as highly regarded as the liberators, sang very low, too low actually, to be actually mistreating or causing crimes against humanity on the people, on the civilians, who are now expecting actually dividends from both the peace agreement, the CPA, from the CPA time through up to independence time. Instead, what they got was this mistreatment, violation of their rights, and many other things, including even death. People are being killed day and night, especially in Juba, by the unknown gunmen, and no action which you can say, sustained action, which can actually solve this problem, was taken by them.
If the government has not taken any tangible action, as you are saying, what other avenues are there available for you and your community to resolve this matter? Because land issues are very sensitive.
That question is very difficult, easy and also difficult to answer, because there was no kind of engagement whereby people can talk to each other, whether the party talking to the army and then listen to each other. There was nothing like that. Everybody was operating in their own way. I don't think the army or even the SPLM as the party had any impact on the army in a way like, okay, we are together. SPLA and SPLM are two sides of the same coin. And if the SPLM, which is actually the ruling party, speak or give orders or talk or directives, the SPLA should listen. There was nothing like that. Okay, even from the side of the government, I don't think if the government tried to talk to the individual SPLA people who are taking the law into their own hands and actually violating the rules even of the army, if they did, I don't know, but I presume they did, but nobody listened.
That's Henry Wani Ronyang, a South Sudanese British citizen. He spoke with me from London today. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, a student writing final exams gives birth. Find out how that happened after this break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Sudanese health officials say the number of coronavirus cases among school children in Khartoum and Al Jazeera State has jumped, putting children at risk. Sudan's COVID-19 task force calls the situation alarming. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Speaking to reporters in Khartoum shortly after a meeting with health officials on Wednesday, Sudanese Health Minister Omar Al-Najib said reports from health ministries in Khartoum and Al Jazeera states indicated a steady increase in the number of corona cases among school children in both states and that some school teachers had died from COVID-19.
The health situation in Khartoum is alarming due to increased cases of COVID-19, especially among school children. We have also recorded cases of death among teaching staff.
Minister Al-Najib says the country does not have enough equipment, facilities, or trained staff to handle the outbreak in cases in schools.
The situation continues to increase in Khartoum and the neighboring Jazeera states, and in fact in the whole Sudan, amidst poor health capacity in receiving new cases of COVID-19 and other health diseases. We have an acute shortage of capacity, provision of oxygen, medicines and other logistical aids.
Al-Najib says the public and various institutions continue to ignore World Health Organization guidelines on preventing transmission of the disease. He worries the situation may worsen in the coming days if people fail to adhere to preventive measures announced by World Health experts more than a year ago, which were reiterated in Wednesday's meeting.
When causing face masks, use of sanitizers and social distancing in all public and private institutions, schools and public transport. The meeting also recommended activating the law that imposed these instructions.
The minister says the ongoing COVID-19 vaccination campaign should be expanded to other vulnerable groups to reduce the number of positive cases.
We have expanded the targeted group to be vaccinated from health workers to include elderly people who are aged over 60 years old, those counted underlying disease and essential service workers to allow continuation of their service to the public in a safe environment.
Officials at the State Health Ministry and the National Ministry of Health did not answer phone calls. Northern Darfur state officials have suspended schools for a week across the state as of Thursday due to the jump in COVID-19 cases. Sudanese Minister for Cabinet Affairs Khalid Omar announced Wednesday he would self-isolate for 14 days after testing positive for COVID-19 earlier this week. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
That's all we prepared for you this Friday. Let's know what you think about this show. My colleague Nabil Biagio has more comments from our listeners who are following up on events in South Sudan. Over to you, Nabil.
Well, it's time for our listener comments, and once again, we heard from many of you this week about our news coverage. Jacob Dior Machueng from Euro Lakes State writes, "The issue of land grabbing in Juba has to be addressed by the authority concerned to avoid the clash of 2012 when the same issue caused many lives. We are tired of the conflicts internally and externally. It's time for South Sudanese to live under one umbrella as brotherhood and sisterhood." And a listener who prefers to remain anonymous adds his or her voice on the issue of land grabbing. They say, "Dear John Tanza, thank you for keeping us informed on events unfolding in South Sudan and beyond. Please allow me to add my voice to that of my colleagues on the issue of land grabbing in Juba. The $1 million question that I always ask is why should a section of South Sudanese continue to grab land with impunity in Central Equatorial State while their leaders keep quiet? The simple logic dictates that this must have been a long-term plan for forceful land occupation. This is already a time bomb if not checked in good time. As I write this letter, my land is being grabbed by a soldier who has no single document for the land. He keeps insisting that the land was given to him by his tribal chief. Who can imagine that our war of liberation will take us back to the dark days of the 13th century civilization? Definitely, there is a need for action to combat this intended crime of land grabbing." Martin Manuel Wugol in Uganda writes, "I would like to congratulate the National Minister of Health for working extra hard to secure COVID-19 vaccines in an effort to save the lives of South Sudanese people, particularly the elderly ones with underlying conditions. I do believe among the community vaccine hesitancy will be a threat in efforts to end the pandemic. I strongly urge beneficiaries to receive their jabs without fear or hesitation because vaccine saves lives." Samuel Remo Inye says, "The killing in South Sudan has become our culture." He continues, "Nobody is paying attention to the ongoing killings in Bor, Pibor, and other parts of the country. South Sudanese people value money and cattle more than human beings." Peter Goj Anyang Majongdul in Block 3, Bor Town, is worried about the same thing. He writes, "Disarming the local population is the best way to save lives from gun-related deaths in South Sudan. I wish a quick recovery to those wounded in the grenade attack in Rumbek." Mabor Alat Rengo from Rumbek writes, "People should not celebrate the arrival of COVID-19 vaccine consignment to Juba because we don't know their safety. I am appealing to the National Minister of Health to make a serious check before they are introduced to the innocent South Sudanese." James Ray Majok in Bentiu Town writes, "As the peace agreement's implementation is going well in South Sudan, things need to be addressed urgently to make the implementation be successful to everyone in the country." Mate Martin Lawrence from WOW writes, "The government of South Sudan has confirmed Peter Biar's message of being undemocratic. The mandate of the current government will expire at the end of the peace agreement in 2022. Someone who only identifies him or herself as South Sudanese writes, I am sorry that some individuals who took up arms to fight the government at the end without achieving their goal as a group or holding peace talks, they decided to join the government and blindly accept them, whereby they are giving some forces within the government to fight their colleagues, which will result in more killing and displacement of innocent civilians. To whom does this country belong? Who is to protect the civilians? I am asking the government of South Sudan and international human rights bodies if possible. Mal Adao Mal in Bortown writes, Hello VOA. The recent statement by General Kwal Manyang, the former defense minister, that the SPLM has failed the country was just proven in Jonglei State by forwarding the names of Dr. Agot Elier to the governor as the town mayor instead of Dr. Maj Majer. The SPLM hates progress. We are disappointed by the decree. Gatiek Wichar in Cairo, Egypt writes, Hello John Tanza, my message goes to South Sudanese high school candidates who just started their examination papers last week. I appreciate them for daring to sit for exams notwithstanding the opposing situation in the country. Education is the only instrument which we can prioritize as South Sudanese for sustainable development. Most of our problems as a country are motivated by the fact that 80% of our population are illiterate. Samuel Malouk Malith from Rumbek writes, I am very happy for the formation of the Transitional Government of National Unity of South Sudan. What remains a challenge is the presence of guns in the hands of youths across the country. James Agbia Mungasi, a South Sudanese living in Cairo, Egypt, offers his condolences to the people of Tanzania and the African countries at large. He says President John was a great and historical man in Africa. We love him and we lost him. Let his innocent soul rest in peace. James Dwar Chenkwe, a Yale in Juba, writes, Hello South Sudan in Focus. I'm really unhappy with the way the revitalized peace agreement is moving. 2 years for now without unified forces in place and without a reconstituted parliament. The hybrid court office also is not established since the announcement. Oh South Sudanese, when can we realize the suffering? Chol Amor Red from Bortown writes, I agree to the fact that accommodating government officials in the most expensive hotels in Bortown is a waste of resources which were supposed to be spent on repairing the dike because vulnerable citizens are still camping by the roadsides, exposed to various hazards. They need shelter, food, medicine, and clean drinking water. And finally, James Levy from Yambio writes, Thanks VOA for updating us on events in our country, South Sudan. Everyone has power. How do we use it as individuals to influence the weak? I beg those individuals to stop supporting violence against the IDPs in the POC in Upper Nile. We always enjoy hearing from you, so keep those comments coming. I'm Nabil Biagio.
Thanks, Nabil. Keep those comments coming. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 638 8011. We now leave you in a dancing mood with the song New Sudan by Musa Juma. This one goes to all our Kenyan listeners across South Sudan.
Viva New Sudan! Sudan Upia! Milambo Abanai personalities Southern region
Karango tiyo matek sana Kofika
We've been listening to Musa Juma with the song Sudan Mpia. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Mm-hmm.
Milambo, Equatorial Personalities, Southern Region.
Daktari, Justin Tio Matek Sana, Masani.